Good morning, everyone. And thank you for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Rebbitzin Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it's my honor to coordinate and host this program. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it in an online setting for retirees, not yet retirees, empty nesters, baby boomers, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, all of whom are looking for intellectual, educational, and spiritual stimulation. Since everybody is all still sheltering in, SPIRIT is the perfect way for all of us to engage in a virtual setting. Today's program is a history lesson and a one that applies to all of us here. We will be learning about the history of the development of Koshris in the United States. And of course, a major starring role in that history has been played by the Orthodox Union and OU Kosher. I am delighted to welcome to the SPIRIT Forum my colleague, Rabbi David Junkins, who is the rabbinical coordinator for OU Kosher. He and the rest of the OU Kosher team are literally on the front lines every day, making sure that all of us have the wonderful array of foods that are produced all over the world. And from what I recall, a million products in over 80 countries. With the pandemic, their jobs have been extremely challenging. It is an honor and a privilege to turn the virtual podium over to Rabbi Junkins. Thank you so much.
Good morning, everybody, or good evening, or good afternoon, depending where you are in the world. We're gonna do the best we can here in a short amount of time to go over some history here, which is, again, gonna be incomplete because, you know, we don't know all the history that happened in cities like Omaha, Nebraska, which had an unbelievable community, the Quad Cities in Illinois, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and all these other towns around the country that had Jewish populations, had to deal with kosher food certifications in many aspects. So a lot of information we're just not going to be able to discuss because just lack of knowledge. For example, the beautiful community in Seattle, which is an old established community of Ashkenazic and Sephardic Jews, which is an unbelievable kehillah that goes back to the late 1800s, and which is still a vibrant community. And, you know, we're not going to really get into the Canadian cities either, but, you know, there's been a history here in the United States of Jewish people wanting to keep kosher. Some of the history is beautiful, some of the history is not so beautiful. And so we'll do the best we can to go over certain aspects. So right now we're going to go over a timeline, and then after that we'll go back to certain instances and people who came on the scenes who helped and tried to develop kosher laws, kosher food certification, some of them are being very successful, not in their own lifetimes, and we'll discuss it. First thing is 1654, first American Jewish congregation founded, 23 Sephardic Jews expelled from the Spanish Inquisition arrived in New Amsterdam and established the congregation Sherith Yisrael. And in order to do that, what they had to start doing is they started doing ritual slaughter. They started doing shechita. In 1739, kosher meat produced for export. New York Jewry relied mostly exclusively on the Spanish and Portuguese communities. And they were actually exporting kosher meat to the West Indies, which is unbelievable. So you see already at this time, there's a Jewish community. They take responsibility, not only for their own kehillah, but to try to do the best they can to help other communities. At the time, we don't know. We only know about what they tried to do with the West Indies, but I wouldn't be surprised that this community did a lot for, at that time, the states of, the 13 colonies. And the next thing that I have in the timeline is 1870, Rokeach Soap Company is founded. So the Rokeach family started their soap company, which we know eventually began going into other things like gefilte fish, borscht, and kosher jams. In 1883, Jacob Horowitz, he came from Hungary, and he started his matzah bakery. In 1887, Dov Ber Manischewitz arrives in Cincinnati, where that was the beginning of Manischewitz. And how he came, he's a part-time peddler in Shoichit. And then in 1887, when he started his company, and you know what happened after that. And interesting, in 1898, that's when the Orthodox Union started, which is basically at that time to help. I mean, there was tremendous amounts of people coming in from Eastern Europe where they just didn't have food. You know, we know what happened when people get off the boats, what happened, how they're taken advantage. Some people were swindled from any money they did have, they got swindled. So the Orthodox Union basically started just to help the Yidden, you know, who were coming off the boats. In 1905, I don't know, I'm sure a lot of people remember because I used to work when I was at Yeshiva in St. Louis, and I'd come in all the time to work at Shapiro's Winery before paying them extra money. And what was there? Ratner's. But Ratner's opened up in 1905 in the Lower East Side, serving soup, gefilte fish, white fish, and, you know, their famous, you know, blintzes. Interesting, which is probably what's helped a lot of people with their cholesterol, is Crisco started in 1911, was Procter & Gamble introduced Crisco, and they were actually going after the Jewish consumer. That's who they were going after, Jewish consumer. And it was interesting, they said they used to advertise cheap kosher vegetable shortening for which the Hebrew race has been waiting 4,000 years. So you can imagine Crisco, which I know that I remember my bubby using Crisco, my mother didn't use it too much, but Crisco was a big hit in 1911. Now, we understand that in the early 1900s, which we're going to go back to what happened to Yaakov Yosef, the chief rabbi of New York, and what he went through trying to establish kosher standards. It was really a pretty rough time in the city of New York, not just the city of New York, but we could even talk about the city of Chicago, what Chicago went through. So, but in 1915 was the first time the New York legislation was introduced, a state law that says that kosher food has to be really kosher. In 1916, Streitz expands kosher market. So that's when Streitz started and started his business and expanded it into matzah. And what happened was, after the kosher law was introduced in 1915 in New York, of course, they wanted to say it was unconstitutional. You have to have a separation of church and state. In 1918, the New York law was upheld. Big, big thing. In 1924 is when the OU started kosher certifications, where they got together and they made the union to also be involved with kosher certification. We understand that, you know, kosher food certification was actually a way for Rabbanim to make parnasa. Everybody had their own hashkachas. Here, the Orthodox Union caused that all the Rabbanim to get together, bring it into under one canopy, and that there should be one way of doing kosher certification. In 1927 is actually when Heinz came and was actually instrumental in this happening, because they wanted to have that, you know, you go to one rabbi, some people hold from it, you go to another rabbi, some people won't hold from it. And that's when Heinz baked beans was certified in 1927. In 1928 is when Hebrew National started. Isidor Pickowitz was a butcher, and he was making franks for a long time, and that's when Hebrew National started. In 1930, Maxwell House Haggadah was printed, the famous Maxwell Haggadah, 1930. In 1934, Monarch Wine, which was Manischewitz, which was founded in Brooklyn, started doing their kosher wines, which was not just, he had wines and other type of sweet, the blackberry, cherry, elderberry, and longberry. Okay. In 1935, the OK certification was started by Abraham Goldstein, which you see that that became a major, major player in kosher food certifications. In 1937, Coke became kosher by their 60th anniversary, which is great. And that's when, in 1940, started, Stephen Klein opened the Barton's Candy Store in New York selling chocolates. And at that point, he actually grew to 50 stores 10 years later. What happened in 1945, the Herzogs came to the United States. They were making wines in Czechoslovakia since 1848, and they came to the United States and started Herzog Wine, which became Royal Kedem Wine Corporation. In 1946, of course, there was a tremendous influx of Holocaust survivors, which also changed the shape of how kosher certifications were being done and instituted a lot of different rules and regulations that they thought were important. In 1947 is when in Baltimore, they started their VOD, that I guess it became a VOD, which eventually became the Star K Kosher Certification. in 1962. Luigi Siegel was the first one that we know of that actually put on airline meals that were kosher certified. That means you can fly TWA, which I don't know if anybody, you know, a lot of people here do remember TWA, and you start getting kosher meals on airlines, on flights. In 1965, Bear Levy bought the OK certification and was very instrumental in actually growing the OK to what it is today. In 1965, there's a couple of ads about, you know, Levy's. You don't have to be Jewish to like Levy's rye bread. And so there was a lot of different, you see that, yeah, a lot of different publications are going about kosher food to also appeal to the non-kosher consuming public. In 1969, the OK certificate started by the Rabbi Center, who's still well, and he should have a Arichas Yamim. In 1972, again, there was another problem with the kosher laws that they went after, saying it was unconstitutional. So what happened was is that they tried again to take it down, and it came out that, no, it still is kosher. You can't bring it down. In 1987, Kosher Fest is born, which is an amazing thing. If anybody went to Kosher Fest, it's incredible to see the amount of people, kosher products that are out there. In 1990, the Federal Kosher Consumer Bill was put into place by Congressman Solars, and was the first Federal Kosher Consumer Bill in the U.S. House of Representatives. And in 1993, a lot of things were changing. A lot more companies became kosher. ConAgra brought Hebrew National. Sara Lee took Best Kosher. And many other companies grew. You have Coors became kosher, General Mills, Hershey's, Kraft, Nestle's. Many, many companies started really becoming kosher in, as we see today, how much kosher food is on the market. So I want to go back now. I just wanted to go through a timeline just to give an idea. But I think it's important, you know, because it was the 111th Yard Site of Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, who is New York's chief rabbi. He was brought in. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He learned in Volozhin. He was somebody who was under Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And he was a tremendous, tremendous Maggid, tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was also Talmud and a Tziv. And he came to, you know, with great fanfare, he came to New York in 1888. And he died in 1902. He had a stroke in between. And he came with tremendous fanfare. And then when he tried to change things, it was unbelievable. They did to him. Jewish periodicals went against him. He had a kosher sign in a butcher shop, and they put a piece of pork next to it. They made his life miserable, miserable. And he tried so much to institute fighting what was going on at that time. It was horrible things that were going on. And cheating, it was a horrific thing. It went on for many, many years. Unfortunately, he did not live to see what he really tried to institute, and that people picked up his mantle of leadership to do what they possibly could. At the same time, in Chicago, where that's where I'm from, there was a tremendous, tremendous guy in the Ridbaz that they brought in, and they wanted him to be the chief rabbi of Chicago. He actually came in 1903, and I think he left in 1903, because in the end result, he tried to clean up the situation. They locked him in a locker in one of the slaughterhouses to kill him, and he had to run away on Shabbos from Chicago to save his own life as he was trying to deal with getting the shechitas. They wouldn't even, when he went into the slaughterhouse, they wouldn't even show him their knives. So he went through tremendous Gehenna in order to try to change things, but these people were people who were actually, you know, started in doing what they could to change things. So it's here in the United States, especially with what happened in already the 1800s already, when it came to trains, and Chicago became the center of trade in the United States from all the Midwest to the East. So you have the famous slaughterhouses in Chicago that went on, and they finally took them down and moved it to Rockford. And finally, I think they closed down, I think in the early 90s. But all meat came through Chicago, all cattle. And anytime there's situations like that, you know, we're dealing with a lot of business. And when you're dealing with a lot of business and tremendous volume, you know, there is situations and problems. Now, somebody who came onto the scene, which was incredible, which we'll get to in a second, but I just want to go to the city of St. Louis, which I spent some time in St. Louis. And St. Louis is a Vadi Ir. And they've had numerous chief rabbis over the years. They all had a tremendous hand of things. Rabbi Eichenstein Zecher Tzaddik LeBrach was there for many years. And what happened was how the Vadi Ir actually started. There was a machlokes, an argument between the butchers and the shochtim, and it's a tremendous machlokes. And the end result, the one who actually it went to in order to decide what to do, is Reb Chaim Oizer of Vilna, who actually helped establish the Vadi Ir in the early 20s. So actually, the Vadi Ir was established by Reb Chaim. And the bottom line was the start of the Vadi Ir of what in the Midwest, which is a big thing. St. Louis is also a big city. They had a lot of Shechita. St. Louis was not at the same aspect of Chicago with the amount of things going through St. Louis like Chicago, but it was a river city. It was a big port, and a lot of things did go up and down the Mississippi River. So that was also started, and the Vadi Ir is a wonderful organization. We'll get back to that a little later. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, the OU started kosher certification, which is amazing. And you had a lot of problems. You had problems there that accordingly, there was so much corruption that in 1925, they said 40% of all the meat that was sold as kosher was not kosher, actually. It was actually treif. So you had a horrible situation going on in New York itself, which just wasn't New York, it was around the whole country. And it was horrible. Some people say it was even more, it was 50 to 65% at that time. So the fraud was incredible. And it was the worst problem. Of course, who was involved with this was organized crime. Organized crime also dominated Kashrith. Because, you know, wherever you can make money and wherever you can push your way in, they tried to do everything they could. And there was a situation, actually, was called the Live Poultry Commission, Merchants Protective Association, operated price-fixing scheme, and distributed racket to dominate New York City kosher chicken trade from 1906 to 1911. And there was actually it was horrible. There was violence of people who tried to stand against it. This horrible thing. And there was one person who did stand up against it. It was a name by the name of Baffs. And the end result is they blew up his store and they murdered him. So you can imagine the corruption that went on, and that was part of the reason it started the New York State Kosher Enforcement Bureau because of this. We are talking about, you know, people were being gunned down, killed, and, you know, roughed up, because when you're dealing with money, unfortunately, it has an effect on anything and everything. The OU, part of the reason why the OU Kashers was started was in order to battle this and to establish and be able to protect the people who were producing kosher, the people who needed to buy kosher, to make sure that what they actually had was a kosher product. But one of the people who came on the scene was Rabbi Rosenberg, he died in 1972, and I was a 12-year-old little kid at the time. I remember hearing about him from Rabbi Goldzweig, because Rabbi Goldzweig was from Chicago, and I'm a Chicago person, so he's heard about as a child of the famous Rabbi Rosenberg. And what was interesting is I was just reading some things and looked over things about Rabbi Wein discussing who he was and how it was impossible to say no to him. You know, you had the vice president of Procter & Gamble, who was one of the largest food corporations in the world, and Rabbi Rosenberg was able to convince them that, yes, they should be certified. And yes, if you're going to sell in cities like New York, Chicago, Detroit, in these cities, you're going to see, and of course, other cities, Cleveland, you're going to see that you're going to make money and you're going to make a lot of money. And that's exactly what happened. There's a maisa when he was actually in the army as a chaplain, where he wanted to do shechita for the refugees, and they were giving a hard time. And he even told he spoke to General Patton, said, "This is what we got to do." And General Patton said, "Yes, sir." That means if this is what we have to do for the people, that's what we're doing. You know, that General Patton was not actually a tremendous, you might say, like this so much. But he ran the OU from 1950 to 1972, where he just turned everything around. He was the one who also got a lot of the companies. You know, one of the companies that he worked very hard with was Rich's. And Rich's Corporation was not Jewish at all. He had a very beautiful relationship with Rabbi Rosenberg. Rabbi Rosenberg convinced him because they made the power of non-dairy creamer and convinced them, if you go kosher, you're going to make a lot of money. And they did. Their sales went up. And he was also the owner of the Buffalo Bills. And they actually had a winning season also when they went kosher. And he did unbelievable things. He also convinced them to put parve on it. And they're trying to figure out, why do I want to do that for? You see, your sales will go up even more. And that's exactly what happened. What happened was Rabbi Rosenberg, actually, from his personality and his ability to get things done, was a major, major, important concept of what we have today. We're living on the shoulders of somebody like a Rabbi Rosenberg, who was the one who went out there to start building up the OU and put into place kosher aspects that, because who were all the mashkichim for the OU at the time? All the rabbis around the country, all the rabbis. But what he instituted was there should be some sort of one way to do everything. And he tried to implement those type of concepts in kosher food certification. Because you know what? Everybody, like, you know, if we go to a shir, we hear a class, you know, it could be 50 people in the class, everybody's going to come out hearing something different. So we tried to do in the best of his ability to have things be put in a way that it'd be easier for the companies to understand, easier to follow through, that it should be the same and companies should not be in any aspect confused. Another person that came on the scene was as I explained before, is Rabbi Eichenstein from St. Louis. Now, Rabbi Eichenstein, he had a big thing on his plate. He had a lot of machlaikas with the butcher shops and the shochtim and people saying, you know, all this kosher certification is no more than a kosher tax. It's going into people's pockets. Rabbi Eichenstein, especially if they realize from the time that he was chief rabbi until he died, and I think it was 1981, you know, there's a lot of things that happened to Jewry in the United States. People were running away. At one time, St. Louis had 40 kosher butcher shops. I remember as a bacher, when I first went to Yeshiva in St. Louis, they were down to 6. Now they're down to 1. Simon Cohn's, that's all that's left. Because people, they didn't keep kosher anymore. You know, the whole concept of Judaism and everything, unfortunately, as time went on. But as we know, what the history here is the United States, assimilation. But he did an unbelievable job. And his right-hand man was somebody of Hyman Flax, Zecher Tzad LeBracha, who came from Vilna, who was unbelievable, unbelievable person. Again, he was a shoychet. He was the one who actually helped establish the Vod to where the Vod became. He was somebody who was just incredible of what he did and how he did it in order to, again, when we're doing kosher certification, we have to have a concept on how to do it. Our mashkichim have to do everything the same way. We can't have people doing different things. And he really did an unbelievable job of establishing the body here in St. Louis and helping Rabbi Eichenstein what he needed. One person that is, to me, is actually somebody who I learned from. His name is Reb Chaim Goldzweig, Zecher Tzadet LeBracha. He joined the OU. Rabbi Rosenberg took him out of Tel's Yeshiva in 1960 and hired him to work for the OU. Rabbi Goldzweig had a photographic memory. Rabbi Goldzweig, as people used to call him, was the kosher Columbo. He'd walk in, you know, very unassuming, and every company that he went to, doesn't make a difference where, fell in love with him. They fell in love with him. He used to come and bring salami sandwiches to everybody, you know, like he used to always bring gifts to the company contacts. And they loved him, not just because he brought him salami sandwiches from Romanian kosher sausages in Chicago, which is actually very good, but he was brilliant. He one time, as I was reading from Rabbi Mati Grunberg, is one time he actually went to a company and they didn't tell him all the ingredients in the product. And Rabbi Goldzweig, you know, being who he was, you know, didn't want to call him out on it. He said he knew all the different ingredients that were being made in that product from his years of experience knew that there was an ingredient missing and that it could actually be a non-kosher ingredient. So very nice here, but Goldsmith kept saying, are you sure you told me all the ingredients? I think you're missing something. And after a couple of times, they realized they couldn't pull the wool over Rabbi Goldzweig's eyes. And the end result is they told him and they fessed up to all the ingredients that were in the product because they realized the Rabbi Chaim Goldzweig was incredible. He knew every ingredient in the product before he walked in. There's not any part of any manufacturing of any product that Rabbi Goldzweig did not know of. He was unbelievable. And a lot of us, including myself, I got involved with this only because of Rabbi Goldzweig. Besides Rabbi Goldzweig being an unbelievable Baal Chesed, I remember one time I was actually a Maggid Shir in St. Louis, and I told over a Chabura to him that I said, and he told me I learned the wrong pshat. He said, you didn't quote the Rush correctly, and he started Baal Peh, going over the Rush and how I missed an important word in the Rush. I asked Rabbi Goldzweig, when was the last time you learned that Rush? Sure, I learned it in Tells, I think, in 1950-something. So he was just a brilliant, unbelievable person. Photographic memory, was a tzaddik. And I would say that he is probably the one person that really built the OU to what it is today, because we're all standing on his shoulders. Another important person is Rabbi Nutter Greenblatt. From Nutter Greenblatt in Memphis, Tennessee, the way it worked is there's the Mason-Dixie line. Rabbi Goldzweig took care of one part of the United States. Reb Nutter Greenblatt took care of the other. And we know who Reb Nutter Greenblatt is. Unbelievable person. He should have a Arichas Yamin. Wonderful person. Unbelievable. Also, a Gaon in Torah. Unbelievable person. Everybody knows that Rabbi Reb Nutter has been going around the United States doing gittin in places that nobody would even think of. Unbelievable person. And he's somebody also that were on his shoulders. Another person, because I'm a Chicago boy, there's another person who has to get a lot of credit. Rabbi Shandalov, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. The first time I met Rabbi Shandalov was when I was in Skokie Yeshiva, and he was a disciplinarian, and we used to meet up a lot when I was in high school, Rabbi Shandalov. Rabbi Shandalov was as straight as an arrow, Rabbi Shandalov, straight as it could be, and he lets you know straight. There's no mincing words with Rabbi Shandalov. But he established some things which is incredible. He established for the city of Chicago something called the list of ingredients, that everybody has to walk into a plant with a list of ingredients. And how he did it was with word. Word. He did it on word. Word perfect, actually. And what he did was he made sure that we had all the ingredients to the products we're making. And it was a tremendous thing that he accomplished. He also accomplished something which is incredible. In order to have a certification of a hotel in Chicago, they had to have a kosher kitchen. If they didn't have a kosher kitchen, they would not be certified. Now, it could be that it was such a big event that the kosher kitchen itself couldn't handle it. But the fact was, it means if you want to do kosher certification, you have to be committed to really be kosher. And you had the biggest hotels in Chicago. You had the Marriott, you had the Hilton, you had the Hyatt, where they had kosher kitchens and kosher dishwashers. Sometimes the events were so big that we had to kosher the regular dishwasher. But Rabbi Shandalov insisted that that's the way it has to be. And he also insisted that we will not kosher anything which is a ben yoma that has been used within 24 hours. We will not do that. And that was Rabbi Shandalov. He also established something in Chicago you couldn't get. You couldn't get a dairy Danish in Chicago, because what did he see going on? You know, when you're in a bakery late at night, you don't know what's going on. They're doing melchiks, they're doing par, things are getting mixed up. Who's on top of it? So he said, no more dairy. If you want to be certified and you want to be certified par, no more dairy in any of the bakeries. And he established that, Rabbi Shandalov. A lot of people are upset. And he said to the bakeries, if you want to do dairy, we'll be there, and we'll be there for Hashkacha Tamidus. We'll do it. We'll watch, and you'll make it. And they said, no. And I lived in Chicago for many years, and I didn't have a dairy Danish, and I lived. It was okay. But these are just some of the people, just to give you an idea of what they did. There was also somebody named Ramesha Bernstein, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, who worked in the OU. And he is the one who actually came up with the whole concept of what we call Schedule A, Schedule B. List of ingredients, list of products. Because not everybody's Rabbi Goldzweig. You can walk in and you can look at something and you remember it. So, you know, I saw that 8 months ago. I see you still have it. Rabbi Goldzweig was able to go through a whole warehouse, look at things, see things. He had Sata Dishmai in order to see things. He was incredible. Rabbi Goldzweig was incredible. But everybody who's like just a normal humanoid, you needed some help. So Rabbi Bernstein is the one who established what's called the Schedule A, Schedule B. Then we walk into companies. We have a list of ingredients. Everything's put into writing. All products are put into writing in order for us to be able to do what we're doing. Now, a lot of the organizations are unbelievable what they've accomplished in today's day. And, you know, whether it's the OU, the OK, the Star K, the CRC, what we've all established in being able to do kashrus, we have databases like the OU database. I think we must have a million ingredients on the database already, which is incredible, which is meaning every ingredient that's in any of our facilities is documented. And not just that, we have something called OU Direct, where the companies use it, we use it. That's how we're able to keep a handle of what we're doing. And it's incredible. And not just is incredible for us, but companies who have access to OU Direct are able to go on. And if they're looking for ingredients because doing a new product, they know already what ingredients they can use that are already kosher certified. And we're not the only organization that does it. The other organizations are doing it too. But I work for the OU, so I got to go rah-rah OU, because that's who I work for. But I have to say that we are basically been the trendsetter. We've helped other organizations over the years in whatever they needed. Rabbi Belsky, Zecher Tzadik LeBracha, Rabbi Schechter, have always been helping other organizations, other cities. If there's issues, we're always getting involved with it. A lot of that is a tremendous. The people who are tremendous in our organization, Rabbi Ganiak and Rabbi Elephant, are incredible. They're always helping other people. Somebody said to Rabbi Ganiak, why are you helping them for? You know, they're your competition. So he said from Rabbi Yashabir sold Rabbi Ganiak, oh, you should not be a monopoly. It shouldn't be just one cautious organization. There should be others, and you should help them to the best of the ability that we can. And the OU, we're not for profit. As you see, what we do besides kashrus and what we try to do for the for Klai Yisrael in general. And I'm very fortunate that I work for the OU. I work for other organizations. I actually started out with the OU and came back to OU years later. And I have to say, it's a schus to be able to work with such an unbelievable organization where you know you're making a difference for Klai Yisrael. So I want to thank everybody. I gave a lot of information real quick, because it's a lot. We could spend hours on this going into each aspect. Just to talk about Omaha, Nebraska, the Mount of Shechita was in Omaha, Nebraska, and Iowa, and even what's going on today. I mean, there's so much to talk about. It's unbelievable. But what is unbelievable is the fact that, if you think about it, how many people keep kosher, and how many companies do we have in China and in India and around the world that are doing kosher certification? How many people are actually keeping kosher? So if you don't see the Yad Hashem in this, you don't see unbelievable Sata Dishmaya and this, what Hashem's doing for us, it's incredible. Thank you, and I hope everybody's healthy, gesund, and stay safe.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Jenkins. We really appreciate your historical perspective that you gave us today on everything that we learned about OU kosher. I know for myself working for the OU, we always say that, you know, the OU is everywhere at all times. And we please convey our thanks to Rabbi Ganiak and the rest of the team for everything that you guys are doing every single day to give us all the food that we're able to eat and under the strictest levels of halachic observance. We really appreciate it. Just a few housekeeping matters. I've mentioned several times in discussions here about the program Perfect Pair, where you have the opportunity to have a dialogue with a teenager this summer. I know that it would be wonderful for everybody, for themselves, but even more important, it's important that we help out, because we have teenagers that really are not having the summers that they wanted. And we have more teenagers right now signed up than we have adults. So when you see the the sign up, if you could please be part of it, it would really be very much appreciated. As always, of course, all of our programs are recorded, and with God's help, you will get this recording either later today or earlier tomorrow morning. You don't have to email me. No matter what, you know, if you have registered and you're not on it, you wouldn't be on today if you hadn't registered. So you don't have to ask, you will get it. And perhaps if you don't see it right away, you should check perhaps your spam and junk files, because you never know what gets put there. But everybody should be getting the materials later on. What else do we have? Oh, I just want to let you know, Thursday we have a very, very unique program called R&R, Retire and Relocate. We will be hosting two couples from various communities in Florida, Century Boca and Hollywood, who will let us know about their experiences in case anybody's interested in making a change. And this will be the first of, we hope, several different programs giving you opportunities to find out about other communities. If you would like to let us know about your community that you've relocated to, or you're interested in a particular place, please let me know and we'll see what we can do to share those communities. And at future, within the next few weeks, with God's help, we'll also be talking about Aliyah. Again, I want to thank Rabbi Jenkins so much for joining us today. Everybody have a wonderful day. Be safe, be healthy, and with God's help, we look forward to seeing you on Thursday. Take care, everybody.